Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Today and tomorrow are expected to be key negotiating days for the bipartisan Gang of Eight immigration bill in the Senate. Negotiations over the border security provisions are so complicated that co-sponsor Marco Rubio had to hear this question on ABC This Week on Sunday.
I have a basic question for you, Senator. Mm-hmm. Do you support your own bill?
Well, look, I think it's an excellent starting point. And I think 95-96% of the bill is in perfect shape and ready to go. But there are elements that need to be improved. This is how the legislative process is supposed to work. You offer an idea, you get public input and the input of your other colleagues. From these criticisms or observations come out new ideas about how to make it better. And of course, you can't ignore that. Those things need to be addressed. And we have the opportunity to do that now, in particular on the border security element. Look, the vast majority of Americans, the vast majority of conservative Republicans are prepared to support immigration reform, but only if we can ensure that we're not going to have another wave of illegal immigration in the future. And so I think they have pointed to valid criticisms of how the border security plan is structured in the bill and, quite frankly, very reasonable ways to address it.
Florida Republican Marco Rubio on ABC with Jonathan Karl on Sunday. We'll talk about the bill and more now with Alvaro Vargas Llosa, author of a new book, Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization, and America. He is senior fellow at the Center on Global Prosperity of the Independent Institute think tank, has been a nationally syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Group and the op-ed editor at the Miami Herald, and he is the Spanish and Peruvian son of the writer Mario Vargas Llosa, in case you were wondering. Alvaro, thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And before we get to the current machinations over the Senate bill, you write about immigration itself as, quote, pure and simple, the right to move, live, work, and die in a different place to that in which one was born, the victory of choice over chance, unquote. Why do you frame it as a right? Do you think migration should be seen as a basic human right?
I'm expressing an ideal. We live in the real world, not in an ideal world. But I think we should gradually move towards a world in which the free circulation of people is seen just as we see today the free circulation of goods and services and ideas. We will, for as long as we have, of course, nation states, place conditions and people coming in. But if we can strive for a world in which the free circulation of people is more widely accepted, I think we will be better off. I also think that there are other important rights involved. If a U.S. business person wants to hire somebody from overseas, why is that a lesser right than the right of his or her neighbor to protest against the presence of immigrants in the United States? So all these important rights are involved, but I'm expressing an ideal, and I hope we can move slowly, gradually, but firmly towards the ideal of a free circulation of people someday.
So, listeners, what do you think? Should immigration be seen as a human right? Call in for Alvaro Vargas Llosa, 212-433-WNYC. Should immigration be seen as a human right? 212-433-9692, or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Should we move in that direction as a species, if as he suggests? You know, to your point, Alvaro, I've asked on the air before that if we have free trade agreements, which are open borders for capital, why not have open borders for labor? But progressives push back hard on that idea as just a formula for corporate exploitation of workers, because it would create a permanent oversupply of workers wherever there are jobs, keeping wages down everywhere. Do you think that would not happen?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, why do we not have that situation among all the different states that are part of the United States of America? It's really very simple. If you think of international dynamics in the same way that you think of domestic dynamics, then you will see that the exchanges between people will create conditions in which there is a certain balance. Well, a few years ago, there was an interesting initiative that came out of the United States with the help of some Latin American countries to create a free trade area of the Americas, in other words, the whole hemisphere, which would have been a very, very interesting idea. Unfortunately, it was killed by the opposition of some countries, Brazil, Argentina, and others. But in that discussion, all of these ideas emerged with a lot of strength, as they had, of course, before that in the European Union. And I mean, despite the situation they're in right now, which is a different topic, clearly you've seen that the free circulation of people has been a very significant element in that union, and one of the positive aspects of that union, again, despite the situation now, which is of a different kind.
Let's take our first phone call. Philip in Newton, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Philip.
Hey, how's it going?
Should immigration be a human right?
Yeah, I agree with what your caller has said, with your speaker has said, that yes, it should be a human right in an ideal situation. My parents are from Brazil. They came to America, and now we live a pretty good life out here. And I'm happy that they did, that they chose to make that decision, because it's good for me, it's good for my brothers and my sisters. And it's something that I think that everyone should be able to make the choice for themselves. Like, I don't want to live here, I want to go somewhere else. I want to be by the beach or in the mountains or wherever. And if that's not in your country, you know, you should be able to go somewhere else, especially if work is there for you.
Thank you very much. James in Suffolk with a different point of view, I think. Hi, James.
Hi. Yeah, the only thing is that, I mean, sure, it's great in an ideal situation. However, the fact of the matter is that immigration can also put an undue burden on the citizens of any particular nation state. And that should not ever be, you know, one person's rights should never infringe on anyone else's rights, and especially someone else's rights to have a happy and prosperous life.
James, thank you very much. So, Alvaro, there's the other side of it, I guess. If mm-hmm. individual, if there's an individual right to migrate, then why shouldn't there also be a community right to determine the financial fate, even more controversially, I guess, the demographic fate of their communities?
Oh, I mean, that if everybody in the community agrees, or if that is a consensus, general consensus in the community, then that is, of course, basically a sum of all the individual rights of the people who make up that community. So who could argue against that? But the problem here is that oftentimes a group of people within a certain community impose their own idea of what their rights are over the others. In this case, I brought up an example, you know, a business person, wanting, could be a small business person, by the way, not just a corporation, wanting to hire labor from overseas, wherever that happens to be. And that person clearly has a right that collides with the right of another person, say a neighbor, who may invoke a very different notion. For instance, why should we allow people to walk on the sidewalk of this neighborhood if I'm paying for that? So clearly, there's a collision of rights. But usually when we talk about community rights in opposition to immigration, what we really mean is a group of people imposing their own idea of rights on another group of people and speaking for the whole community without necessarily representing the whole community.
Also, on the very basic notion of migration, as you write about in the book, you review the reasons that human beings migrate at all, from anywhere to anywhere. And I guess there are a few basic unchanging things, which are the ones we might think of right off the bat: more economic opportunity and more personal freedom. Is it as simple as that in almost all cases?
Well, it's a fascinating issue. I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners realize that until the 1980s, Europe was a place where migration originated in. In other words, where people were more interested in leaving than in coming in. Germany was exporting about 500,000 people until the 1980s. And certainly that kind of migration was not due to poverty or economic conditions primarily. People migrate for all sorts of reasons. I mean, family, distress conditions at home. And by distress, I don't necessarily mean economic. Of course, economic economic conditions as well. They can migrate simply because of historical ties. The United States gets immigrants from the Philippines, a very significant source of immigration. Why? Obviously because of the involvement of the U.S. in that country at the end of the 19th century in the war. And that led to ties that were developed in time after the Second World War. The U.S. established a program basically to attract nurses to the United States. So all these historical ties sometimes play a very important role. Mexicans started to come to the United States, ironically, not so much because they wanted to leave home, but because the U.S. was interested in substituting Japanese labor for the railroad construction with Mexican labor.
And sometimes personal freedom and economic opportunity are in conflict. I remember in South Africa's apartheid era, black people from neighboring African countries used to move to South Africa more than South Africans would move out because that country had more jobs than their home countries, but that didn't make it pretty.
Oh, that's true. I mean, you can have a situation in which you have more political freedom in one country, but it's so badly governed that you have horrific economic conditions. And then people may ironically want to go to a lesser, a country that's less free politically, but where economic conditions are better. I mean, obviously, that's understandable. You know?
Alvaro Vargas Llosa, author of Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization, and America, and Eddie in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Do you think migration should be a human right?
It is a human right. I mean, humanity migrated from wherever it started, and I guess now we're agreeing it's from Africa, and it migrated naturally to wherever it took it. And borders are artificial, they're man-made. Look at the map of Africa today. That was something that was done over the last couple hundred years, you know what I mean? And, you know, the privilege have access to the world. You know, they don't have any problems going anywhere. There's nobody keeping them from going anywhere. You know, they had to control they occupy and control the best territory. You know, even
it's poor people who borders keep in.
Of course, even people in the happenstance that have been born in, let's say, the United States. I mean, you know, the poor don't occupy the best territory. It's you know, a matter of money, you know, keeping somebody I don't want here.
Eddie, thank you very much. Alvaro, you do acknowledge in the book that from 1990 to 2004, the influx of immigrants into the United States led to a 1.5% reduction in wages for native-born Americans with less than a high school education. So if the poor people here are the ones who suffer as a result of immigration, why isn't that reason enough to limit immigration among the uneducated or the low-skilled if we're concerned about, you know, lower-income people in the United States?
Well, that effect is offset by many different things that also happen when immigrants come in. One of them is, of course, people move up the economic scale and ladder, and the net effect is a rise in wages of about 1.8%. It also happens to be the case that those immigrants are helping keep the price of those services in which they're involved down, therefore helping consumers, including poor native consumers, people born in the United States. So overall, what I'm really trying to say there is there's a very small temporary impact that's offset by a lot of positive consequences. More generally, as I talk about in a couple of the chapters of the book, the economic impact is overwhelmingly positive, both as consumers and producers. Immigrants help the economy. They also help it in the sense that they make the whole economy a lot more productive.
Bob in Mountainside is calling with a thought about the immigration bill in the Senate. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I tell you what, I think that if the Republicans vote for this, they are committing hari-kari because, you know, there'll just going to be an influx of Democratic voting constituents. And we'll be looking like New York, like you mentioned in the earlier segment, 6-1 Democrats to Republicans. And it's just foolhardy on their part.
On the other hand, the analysis that many Republicans give is that there are so many Latinos in America already, not to mention Asian immigrants who voted overwhelmingly for Obama, even though they're in the highest income group. I think even, you know, more than whites, they should have Republican-leaning interests, but they don't see it that way. I think largely because Republicans are seen as too anti-immigrant. So maybe they have to give on this if they're going to have a chance with them on other values in the future.
So in other words, in like 25 or 50 years, we may build up a middle class or an upper middle class, and they may just decide then to vote Republican.
That's
the
theory.
So we should throw away our present. For the future?
Well, if it's throwing away.
There's a minimal amount of that voting. I mean, the same people that are, you know, have not been served by this administration as far as the lower economic group goes, yes. are going to vote for this? Are you kidding me?
Well, as a matter of...
They don't want more competition. You just mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
That's competition among lower economic and lower educated people.
I'll say one more thing about this. Bush got a significantly larger proportion of Latino votes than either McCain or Romney did, which I think indicates that there is potential among that group over the long term if they're not seen as marginalized. And of course, he was pushing comprehensive immigration reform.
Well, it sure didn't work in the last election.
Bob, thank you. We're going to leave it there. And we're just about out of time, Alvaro, but what do you want to say about the immigration bill? Because I think as we heard in the Marco Rubio clip at the beginning of the segment, the sticking point is how to secure the border. One Republican amendment to construct a 700-mile fence before anyone currently here illegally could get a green card was defeated, but the idea is still alive of requiring some kind of metrics.
Brian, two quick points. About the last point that the caller made, don't be so hard on yourselves, Republicans. I mean, Bush got 40% of the Hispanic vote. Reagan got 40% of the Hispanic vote in one of the two elections. And the only reason the situation has changed now is because there's this perceived hostility about the Republican attitude to immigration among immigrants. If this bill is approved without too many amendments that hurt the essence of it, I think it's perfectly possible in the future for Republicans to capture a large chunk of the Hispanic vote. And again, about the bill, Brian, the important thing is to keep the essence. I mean, it moves in the right direction. There are things I'm worried about. They put a lot of caps on immigration, trying to anticipate the future, and that was a mistake that previous attempts at reform made. But I hope they don't introduce more amendments that will kill the essence of it. There's a lot about border security already, a lot of money being thrown in there, a new agency being set up, a lot of conditions placed. So it's not true that this doesn't take care of border security at all.
We'll see what happens. They say crunch time for this bill is over the next 2 days. We will see what happens, and we'll keep covering it here on the show. And we thank Alvaro Vargas Llosa, author now of Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization, and America. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, advice columnist Emily Yaffe to close out today's show. Better known on Slate as Dear Prudence, she'll counsel one of our listeners who was asked to split the check that she probably couldn't afford at a big restaurant party. Stay with us.